Hello?
Hi, is this Jim?
Yeah.
Hey, Jim, this is Aaron calling.
All right, great.
I was hoping that you had time to tell us about Earth Ear. So, first of all, what is Earth Ear?
Ooh, good question. Earth Ear is a record label, and it's a catalog, and it's a nexus point for accessing a fairly broad range of people that work with field recordings as the foundation of their work. I started it in the late 90s, I guess 98 was when I really started doing it full-time. Its foundation is more accessible and commercial side of working with field recordings, though the longer I'm at it, the more broad the brush gets in terms of what I'm being exposed to and therefore what I'm putting out on the website.
Excellent. As far as putting out goes, there is in fact a label connected with Earth Ear?
Yes, we've released 7 CDs so far, with our 8th one on the way from Bay Area producer Jason Rainier.
Earprints?
Yes. I'm not sure it's still on the air at KPFA. I think he might have finally let that go just because he was doing too much.
Right.
But yeah, he had a project called Bay of Sound, which he had over 30 recorders record on a single day around the world. And he did it several years ago, and actually ever since Earth Ear first began in 1999, that's been a CD in development, but I think we've now overcome the new baby syndrome in Jason's life, and we're actually going to get it out here in the next 2 or 3 months.
Excellent. So look for that sort of in the late summer?
Yeah, we should definitely have it by late summer. It's on the verge of going to the manufacturer now, actually.
Excellent. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, that's going to be a pretty neat release. And definitely our most, in terms of the Earth Ear label, the one that has the strongest human, urban kind of elements to it.
I know that some of your other releases have actually met with a fair amount of success. Specifically, I had recently read that there were some awards that were given to Grooved Whale.
Yes, and I can't completely divulge the details yet because it's going to be officially announced on June 1st. But a trade magazine that does annual Album of the Year awards has given it the Ambient Electronica Album of the Year award, which is very exciting. It's a good little feather in the cap. It's been definitely a challenge to try to take what I thought was the most accessible and kind of interesting of soundscape works and actually sell them. The selling part's definitely tricky. It's easy, pulling together projects and releases, and the overall response that Earth Ear has gotten from the press and from people that are familiar with this field has been very encouraging. But actually selling enough CDs to, even pay me, let alone have any kind of support staff, has been very challenging. So, who knows? This award might actually help sell a few more. The big trick has been just getting real distribution into retail. Retail is the thing that, of course, any small independent record company struggles with.
I know all about it. Well,
if
anyone's listening and is potentially interested in helping out Earth Ear, be sure to either contact us or go directly to earthear.com, where there's a wide range of contact information, and you can also see the depth of the site that's there. I noticed when you had first started, when I first got the catalog, I was impressed that you had kind of put together an introduction to back up the materials on the website that try to really educate people coming into the field for the first time as to the range of materials that's available. And you'd put together this core library of CDs. Are you still doing that?
That's still available, though. I've been quite surprised at how few people have availed themselves of that option. We've really just sold a handful of subscriptions, though it is, a great way to get a sense of what's going on in the field.
And how big is the library?
The core library is 12 CDs. The collection that we have in the catalog now is about 100. And the longer we go, actually, the more the earthier releases become a pretty good introduction in themselves. In the beginning, when we just had 3 releases that, really didn't come close to showing the spectrum of approaches, then the core library, was a good way to take a bigger look.
Now, when you first started Earth Ear, did you come into it knowing that there were people who were using field recordings in sort of a more experimental or avant-garde way?
I was only familiar with Hildegard Westerkamp in terms of more experimental approaches at that point. And as you know, she does do interesting transformations and creates, fairly elaborate pieces out of just field recordings. But it's also certainly not out on the edge of what people are doing these days.
In fact, some of the other stuff we're going to be listening to today is pretty out there. But, you know, it's interesting, as I've done this radio show and tried to put together sort of a survey of what's going on in the limited amount of time I had available, it's pretty amazing to see that all around the world people are really doing this. So hopefully that bodes well. And I think if people can find out about the site, hopefully they'll come to see it as a real resource and, you know, start pumping cash into you. Speaking of resources, is it just this year that acousticecology.org got off the ground?
Yeah, that's kind of a spin-off from the beginning. Earthear has tried to not just speak about recorded interpretations of the soundscape, but, you know, a real theme for me personally that I've tried to express through the catalog and the website is that the act of listening to recorded soundscapes for me feeds a deepening of my own direct connection with the soundscapes around me, you know, in my daily life. So from the beginning, we've tried to have essays and information about the state of the actual living soundscapes in the world, not just the abstractions that end up on CDs. That's another thing I'll just tangentially mention, that from the beginning with Earthear, we've tried to address directly paradoxes of listening to the world outside of itself, bringing the world into your living room. The paradox of why go into those abstractions of the world? Why not just, you know, be in the world?
Right. Why suffer mediation like we do so much of the time?
Yeah, right. And so we tried to address that directly from the beginning and not go the route of so many of the early 90s, late 80s nature sound folks that were really trying to create some kind of illusion of the purity of the world or something. We, from the beginning, tried to embrace the idea that this is just a creative interpretation. It's certainly not ever going to duplicate or even approach the profound experience of being either in the wilderness or in a city street. The vividness and the all-embracing quality of the soundscapes that you actually experience are always going to be orders of magnitude more interesting than anything that'll end up on a CD. So we have approached it from the perspective of the CDs are a creative reinterpretation of a soundscape that may open or tweak or inform your ears in a way that makes your experience of the world a little different after that. But back to your original question, Acoustic Ecology spun off from a section of Earthear that we had for a while called Acoustic Activism, which dealt with specific issues, environmental issues that were around soundscape, things like airplane overflights or motorized recreation versus quiet recreation on public lands and things like that. So recently I spun that into a much more comprehensive separate site called acousticecology.org, which will most likely spawn an American chapter of the World Forum for Acoustic Ecology.
Splendid. Have you been talking to Gordon Hempton by any chance?
Oh yeah, I've been quite close with Gordon for a while.
If you're not familiar with his work, in addition to being a world-class sound recordist himself, he's also become very interested in the notion of silence in the world, or in particular the absence of human-made sound. And as a result, he's put together the One Square Inch of Silence initiative, in which I believe he wants to get a square inch from which you can hear no incursion of human-made sound in every national park. Is that the case?
That's definitely his ultimate goal, yeah.
Yeah, that's the target. Well, certainly good luck to him with achieving that. Now, I noticed when I was just looking around the site to see if there was anything that we should talk about, that you've got a feature called Soundscape of the Week. Is that ongoing?
It is, yeah. We've created this small little graphic link that can be served from our site to other websites, and each Sunday we switch the clip, and it's just, you know, it triggers a little real audio soundscape, and it's everything from natural soundscapes to urban soundscapes. It's quite a range of things that we've pulled off of the CDs that are in our catalog.
Now, is that something that if people go to the site, they can just cut and paste a bit of code onto their own homepage?
Yeah, exactly. If it's on the Earthear homepage, and there's a little link there. If you want this on your site, click here, and it takes you to the page where the instructions are of how to do that.
Great. If people put that, is this going to put a little icon, and then when they click on it, it'll just immediately, without going to your site, start playing the clip of the week?
Exactly.
Wow, that's quite excellent. Now, you're currently based out of New Mexico, is that the case?
That's right, outside Santa Fe.
Well, what are some of your favorite sounds around where you live?
Ooh, there's a lot of them. I'm actually lucky to live in a canyon that has a main Amtrak and freight line through it.
I think I just heard a horn in the background a moment ago.
Ah, yeah, you did, though. That was in my home away from home. That's also along the train line in the Central Valley. In any case, our canyon is really beautifully situated for especially amazing nighttime train soundscapes. You can often hear the train coming for 20 or 30 minutes from down the valley, and then every train sounds different depending on the state of the air that night.
I'm a big fan of train sound. Have you made any recordings of that particular soundscape?
No, actually, I haven't done any recording myself. I just work with people out there in the world who are making it their passion. I'm more of a writer, synthesist, trying to create some kind of a synergy out of the wide variety of work that other people are doing.
Well, it's a real mission, and I know I, for one, am grateful. Well, I certainly hope that someone has a chance to come out and maybe visit you, maybe even myself, and record that trainscape.
That would be great.
I actually discovered recently that there's a Yahoo List news group that's devoted entirely to people who are interested in recording trains.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's like the internet bringing people together.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, unfortunately, the list doesn't get too much traffic, as it seems to be an offshoot of the train spotting culture. People being particularly interested in the sounds of very specific locomotives.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, I'm finding that occasionally you get people posting there who just seem to have like a general love of the way that trains massively impact the acoustic environment, particularly that idea of them coming from a distance and then receding and sort of the swell, almost an organic ocean-like swell of them moving through.
For sure. I mean, sometimes there's this whole kind of resonant pulse that gets set up in the canyon. I don't know what causes that to happen sometimes, but the canyon is a modest size. The canyon walls are 200 or 300 feet high, and it's, you know, a half, three-quarters of a mile wide. And there's times when the whole canyon just starts pulsing with this kind of low-end tone. It's just really, really nice one.
Well, I hope I get a chance to hear it. Yesterday, I had gotten an email from you that said that you were sort of looking into the future and wondering where Earthear was going and whether you were going to be able to continue putting as much energy into it as you have been so far. Can you sort of recap for us what the situation is?
Well, yeah. What I've been trying to do with Earthear has been aiming high, trying to bring it to a wider audience, trying to step outside the current audience for experimental sound works and try to bring, as I said earlier, some of them what I thought were more accessible and interesting to untrained ears pieces to a wider audience. And so in doing that, it's been definitely costing more to try to reach that audience than it would be to just kind of settle back in my yurt and just sell a few CDs to people that are already onto it. So I definitely haven't been reaching enough people to pull that off. And in fact, not even enough just to, you know, support myself. So at this point, I'm looking at whether I should try to sell Earthear to a record company that is interested in continuing to pursue that bigger market, or whether I should find some kind of nonprofit org and let Earthear kind of shift and become more of a nonprofit artsy type of label, where it's operating on the model of some of the other new music labels that are supported by grants that support the development of non-commercial artists, or whether I should just let it really shrink down and just do it in my spare time. And those are the kind of the three options in front of me, and I'm just starting to put out feelers and actually initially just networking with the people who have been involved with Earthear over the years and get input and suggestions from everybody in the network about what they would recommend that I look at.
Well, if someone has ideas or is interested in perhaps helping out themselves, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
They can certainly go to the Earthear website and see what we're up to, and I can always be emailed, jim@earthear.com.
Great. So you hear that, folks. If any of you have bright ideas or feel like being an angel investor for an emerging art form, please get a hold of Jim, because it's a real resource for all of us. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to tell us about, Jim?
I think that's a pretty good overview. I really encourage what you're doing, too. I'm really excited about the program you're doing this weekend. I'm really also excited about the series of live events you've been doing in the Bay Area. And that's something that I hope will start to spring up all over the place. It's something I'm starting to do in Santa Fe, and I'd like to see that continue that, because ultimately, you know, it's really just about bringing people together that are interested in listening and sharing each other's work and supporting outlets for people that are doing this kind of work to have it be heard. That's the real fundamental goal of it all.
I think we're obviously quite agreed in the necessity of doing that one way or the other. Well, I appreciate you talking with us. And just one last thing I would ask you is, I know you've put out a sampler that's received a lot of positive press called Dreams of Gaia.
Yes.
And I was wondering, if we're going to play a track off that for the listeners, is there any one that you might pick out? I know that, of course, they're all wonderful and intentionally chosen to really represent a spectrum.
Right.
But if you'd like to introduce any one of those tracks, why don't you do that?
Oh, that's a good question. I'm always quite amazed by Doug Quinn's Weddell Seal recordings, which are completely unmanipulated, raw recording when he first dropped his hydrophones under 6 feet of sea ice in Antarctica. And these giant seals were making sounds that were so loud he could feel them through 6 feet of ice. That track is one that always impresses me.
Thanks for the recommendation. Let's take a listen.
Yeah.
I think that about wrapped it up. So.
Okay, great. Well, listen, Aaron, thanks for everything you're doing.
And likewise, of course. Well, thanks so much, Jim.
Sure.
And take care.
Yeah, you too.
Bye-bye.
Bye.